From Everbank Field in Jacksonville, this is Jaguars.com Live. A weekly look inside the Jacksonville Jaguars organization. Jaguars.com Live starts right now.
And we start off on this Wednesday with a look inside Everbank Field. The Monster Jam is gone. All the dirt just a few days removed from 2 days of monster trucks at Everbank Field. And not too long from now, we'll have football back on that field again. Plenty to get to today on Jaguars.com Live, presented by Everbank. J.P. Shadrick, Brian Sexton, John Osier, Mike Mayock from NFL Network will join us. The NFL Scouting Combine is right around the corner. Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald will discuss all the news that the last few days came out about possible trades between the Dolphins and the Jaguars, and an update on Daly's Place at the south end of Everbank Field. What's the progress of the construction? All that to come, but we start today with one of the best in the business, NFL Network analyst Mike Mayock, the busiest man in football this time of year. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Doing well. We're excited for next week. We'll get to the combine and your rankings, your annual position rankings coming up. Let's start off big picture Jaguars here. First time we've had a chance to talk with you since the changes in the front office. Tom Coughlin is back. Dave Caldwell gets an extension. Doug Marrone, the head coach. Was it the right move by Shad Khan?
Yeah, I think what it does is it pretty much tells all the players and the fans that there's going to be a stable base. And even though some changes had to be made, David Caldwell, I think, has brought in a lot of good young talent to that team. And I've been a Tom Coughlin fan for a lot of years. He coached my younger brother at Boston College. I know Tom and what Tom's all about. So I'm a big fan of his old school feel for the game of football, and I feel the same way about Doug Marrone. So I think Shad Khan and his group made a statement that we believe David can develop talent, and they believe that Tom Coughlin and the new coaching staff will draft and develop also.
Mike, fans here got a two-game glimpse of Doug Marrone as a head coach. I'm assuming you looked at him a lot more when he was the head guy in Buffalo. Tell fans what he brings to the table, what kind of head coach he is, and sort of why he was so coveted. He's a guy who could have gotten jobs elsewhere and probably would have gotten a job at some point very soon. What is it about him?
Well, I think he's highly thought of and respected both by coaches and players, and he's got a plan. He sticks to the plan. I don't think a whole lot bothers him outside the building. I think he's going to build from the inside out as far as making sure the offensive and defensive lines are solid. And I'm a believer in that infrastructure also. And I think you know what you're going to get with him. And I think to take it a step further, what has to happen is the development of your quarterback, who, you know, I thought took a little bit of a step back a year ago. And you kind of go from thinking you've got the centerpiece of your franchise to having some concerns on the offensive side of the ball. And I think it probably surprised you guys and the Jaguar fans as far as the offensive issues, as well as me.
Is he savable, Mike? Is that something that his team can build around going forward or not?
I think he's a really talented guy. And I did a Thursday night game last year on the radio and had not seen tape of Bortles in quite a while. And when I put the tape on to prepare for the game, I was really surprised at how I thought some things had disintegrated a little bit. I thought his accuracy, his pocket awareness, his decision-making had taken a step back. And he's got talent. He's a big, strong kid. He can push the ball down the field. And let's face it, you know, and Nathaniel Hackett and Scott Milanovich and those guys, that's job one this year.
Mike, when I look at him, I see a play-action quarterback because I think he's good with the ball in his hands. Do you see him the same way? And would you be shocked if they took a running back at number four, understanding that fixing the quarterback is such a critical issue?
No, I think a running back would be in the conversation, especially in this year's draft. And whether it's Fournette or Dalvin Cook or whatever, I think you have to know what you're getting into, though. I mean, when you draft a Fournette, I think your mindset has to be like a Minnesota with Adrian Peterson, or like a Carolina, or like a Tennessee. You know what, you've got to feed that ball. You know, he's got to get 20, 22, 24 touches every game in the run game. And you've got to have that mindset, and your offensive line has to have that mindset. And if that happens, then, yeah, you're right. I think Bortles would be the beneficiary of that. It would take a lot of pressure off of him, and then you become a little bit more of a play-action team. Now, that's a commitment to a Fournette. If you draft a Dalvin Cook, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm just saying conversationally, he's a little bit more of today's NFL because he's going to get his 20 touches, but they're going to be different. It might be 12 in the run game, 8 in the pass game, any one of which he might break the whole way. So there's different conversations about different running backs, and even though the NFL has become a pass-first league, if you can't run the ball efficiently, at least efficiently, it becomes really hard to win in the league.
Mike, I know I'm asking you to generalize, and it's still only February, but those two guys obviously are big-time players. Do they belong in the conversation as high as the top five, or is running back so deep this year that it seems ridiculous to talk about running backs that high?
I think that for the most part, I think you can get running backs in most drafts down through the third and fourth round, and you can kind of couple running backs with a bigger or stronger back and a third down change of pace guy. However, when you talk about difference makers, I think that's a different conversation. I think Fournette is a difference maker on one side. I think Dalvin Cook is a different kind of difference maker. And if you're going to commit to a running back in the top 10, you better know that you're committing to something that your coaching staff has to buy into also. So I think both of those guys are legitimate, talent-wise, top 10 picks. You're sitting there at number 4, and, you know, I think the top, if you're just saying off the top of the head right now, I think Myles Garrett from A&M has to be in the conversation. I think Jonathan Allen from Alabama has to be in the conversation. There are two really special safeties in this draft, Malik Hooker from Ohio State, Jamal Adams from LSU. So right there are four names with two running backs. That gets you 6 right there. But this, I think the general consensus is, not just for the first round, but talking the draft in general, is that outside of quarterback and offensive line, this is really a good draft.
Mike Mayock with us from NFL Network. Last couple of minutes with you, Mike. We got a fan question pertaining to the safety position. You mentioned Jamal Adams. He gets mocked to the Jaguars a lot. Is he strictly a strong safety? How good is he in coverage? This is from BCB Germany, Mike.
No, he can absolutely play in the box or in deep middle. He's got he can drop down on the slot and cover man-to-man. Now, I don't think you want him to make a living doing just that. But he's a big, strong guy that will tackle. He can play deep zones. You couldn't talk about him as a potential top 10 pick if he couldn't handle the coverage aspect of that position.
Check out coverage. NFL Network has exclusive coverage of the NFL Scouting Combine March 3rd through 6th. Give him a follow on Twitter. I know you're a big tweeter, Mike, at Mike Mayock. We look forward to your coverage as always, and we appreciate your time on a busy week.
Thanks so much, fellas.
There he is, Mike Mayock, NFL Network, joining us. And speaking of Combine coverage, we'll have our own Combine coverage as always. A week from today, it starts in Indianapolis. Dave Caldwell, Doug Marrone will join us, national media guest as well. That's all on Jaguars.com coming up next week from the Convention Center. Not Lucas Oil Stadium this year. Media Row has moved here in 2017. The actual event on field is still in the Dome, but we'll be across the street this year on Radio Row. Should be a fun one.
Yeah, I'll be there for the, like 16th straight year. So that's what I do in February. I hang in Indy.
Yeah. Not the first or last time you've hung an Indy.
No. Well, getting back to Mike Mayock,
yeah.
I thought what was interesting there, he enunciated very well what you're starting to get a feel for with the two running backs, meaning if you're going to go Leonard Fournette or Dalvin Cook, it's not really so much who do you think is better. It's more what type of team do you want to be. And to me, if the Jags go running back, Brian – I just can't see them going Cook over Fournette if they're both there. For some reason, Fournette seems like that guy, like he said, that you're building your team around, you're building your identity. If they go that route, if they want to be the kind of team that you're sort of hearing that they are, which is this run-first team, Fournette, if they go back at 4, which I'm not sure they will, it seems like he would be the guy to me.
Maybe I'm just going back to 1998 in my mind when the conversation was about Curtis Enos and Fred Taylor. And obviously Enos didn't pan out, but he was that guy that, you know, it appeared
Tom
really coveted.
Sure.
Until
appeared. He loved
right,
him.
Right, right. Loved him. Until Fred ran the 4.29 or 4.31, whatever it was, in Gainesville that day. And he walked by this studio, and I said, how was it? You know, Tom never breaks stride. But he stopped, he came back in, and he whistled. He went, right? That's all he said.
He still wanted
yeah.
Enos, though.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, he wanted that size.
Right.
Of course, when Fred got here and they couldn't get a jersey over his shoulders,
right.
You realized Fred's a big cat, too.
Different guy.
Right. So here you got a 6'1", 235-pounder. He doesn't have Fred's breakaway speed, but he's fast enough. And he's that pounding kind of back. I just, knowing Tom, sensing Doug, mm-hmm. right, and if trading for Brandon Albert, maybe signing a guard, drafting a guard, whatever, it just seems like that guy, 6'1", 240, special. Really, really special to have that kind of a back. Take him right now.
Right.
Do it.
It all lines up. And I'm not saying take him right now, do it. But
I am.
If you're trying to figure out how to come up with a formula where you can win and improve.
And keep your defense on the sidelines and fresh.
And have a chance with a quarterback who right now has not shown himself to be elite. If you're trying to get as much success out of this team next year as you can, which they are, it feels like that. It feels a little bit like, I don't want to compare it to Tennessee last year, but a little bit like that where they decided we're going to go maybe a little against the grain of the rest of the NFL right now. Try to run, try to do it this way. You know, again, this is very speculative because they really haven't discussed their approach on this sort of a level. It feels like with the running backs available and with the line wanting to be more of a running line, it feels like that could be a direction as we go forward.
I just, you know, I think there's a skill set that Bortles has, and asking him to throw the ball 35 to 50 times a game, isn't it? You go back and look at the numbers, I think he's won once when he's thrown the ball more than 40 times in a game. You put that big back in there and give him the chance to do some things with the ball in his hand, which I think he's pretty good at.
Right.
All of a sudden, you can't keep the safety deep. A-Rob all of a sudden has a chance to go up for the 50-50 ball. More time for him to find Marquise because they have to be conscious of that. I'm sorry, do it now. You
there's
know
more
I'm
work to do
oh,
on
yeah.
the offensive line. If you're going to take a back and build this, just getting Brandon Albert's not everything.
Oh, no, it's not enough. I'm the wallflower in the group, Ryan. I never go out with my opinion. I'm saying right now,
wait a minute.
February 22nd, take Leonard Fournette. I'm going to bang that drum. Now, that means nothing, except I really believe that if you put that kind of a running back with this quarterback and help that defense, you're in great shape.
Of course, the last few days around here, news around the Jaguars with pending, we understand, trades with the Miami Dolphins. And we understand that because of the reporting of Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald. He's covered the Dolphins in the NFL since 1990, and he's on the line with us now. Good afternoon, Armando. What's up?
Hello, man. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for coming on with us today. And, you know, I guess the latest news is that Julius Thomas passed his physical in Miami.
Yay! Yeah, Julius, you know, the elbow checked out and the ankle checked out and the lower back checked out and the tailbone checked out. And the other ankle checked out. My gosh. That's a lot of checking the Dolphins did.
Armando, this is John Osier again. I've been talking to you way too much lately, but good to talk to you again. What's the expectation level of the team with Julius? I mean, there were such expectations on him 2 years ago, and it strikes me that he's really in a situation where whatever he gives them is a big plus for him. Is that their approach with this, that, hey, this is a pretty easy decision because we're not risking very much?
Well, it's an easy decision because he might change their offense. And the reason that he might change their offense is he's not an inline tight end. They can flank him out wide. And when you do that, all of a sudden you're not an 11 team, you're a 12 team. And an 11 team, obviously you've got one tight end and three wide receivers out there if you're the Dolphins. A 12 team, they might be going double tight end. And the reason they can do that is because Julius Thomas is able to be outside and be a threat, especially in the red zone. And that's big for the Dolphins because that not only helps the passing game, but it really helps the running game. And the reason that it helps the running game is all of a sudden when you have that pass catching threat outside at tight end, a linebacker is no longer in the tackle box. And so now you don't have, you know, even seven guys in the tackle box. And now you can run the football against fewer people. And so it really does help both the running game and the passing game. It really does change the way things are approached by the Dolphins.
Armando Salguero with us from the Miami Herald. Of course, the other pending trade, Brandon Albert, apparently coming to Jacksonville, possibly coming to Jacksonville, hasn't come through yet. The league year starts March 9th. So obviously they have a lot of faith in Tunsil to move outside and be their future tackle, or they wouldn't be making this move. Is that your view of it?
That's absolutely correct. And also, you know, they save $7.5 million almost by moving on from Brandon. This is not an easy thing for the Dolphins in that, number one, Brandon is a good player. He's a great guy in the locker room. He knew that Laremy Tunsil was the future for the Dolphins at left tackle, and yet he took him under his wing and he helped him learn to be a pro, which for Tunsil, that was a huge deal, because here you have a veteran of almost, you know, 8 or 9 years, and he's teaching you how to be a professional in the NFL, knowing that you're the guy that's going to replace him. It takes a certain, you know, character to be able to do that. Brandon Albert showed that character last year.
A lot of guys talk about doing it. Not everybody does it, right, Armando? I mean, that's pretty much...
Absolutely, yeah. Right, John. A lot of guys, you know, they stiff-arm the enemy, so to speak, knowing that, hey, if you're going to compete with me for a position, I'm going to know what I know, and you better learn what I know, otherwise you're not going to take it from me. And that wasn't Brandon Albert's approach at all. One thing that's interesting about Brandon Albert going to Jacksonville is he's going to have to get a pay raise, which I'm sure the Jacksonville Jaguars just love that idea.
Well, they have room. But we had talked last week, Armando, when I talked to you, that you felt like, except for the injuries, that this guy could still play at a high level. There were a couple of games, I guess, last year that sort of stuck in the craw of the Dolphins, especially the playoff game. But is Brandon Albert still a top-of-the-line left tackle?
When he's healthy, yes. The problem is, like you mentioned, John, that when some players who have had injuries in the past reach a certain age, the number of games that they are available starts to decrease year over year. And, you know, availability and durability, they're abilities. It does a team no good if you're a really good player but you're not on the field. And so that's one of the things that the Dolphins also measured, because investing that much money in a player that's going to play less, not more, is not wisdom.
We'll look forward to March 9th when we actually see some of the real numbers start to come out when the deals go through. Hey, we've got you here, Armando. We know you're a Hall of Fame selector, so we've got to ask you, how close was Tony Boselli to making the Hall of Fame this year?
Tony Boselli actually jumped over Joe Jacoby in the pecking order of certainly of offensive tackles, but of overall players. Joe Jacoby last year was in the final 10. This year, he didn't make it to the final 10, and Tony Boselli did. So in that regard, in his first year, quote-unquote, in the room with the selectors, where the selectors are debating Tony Boselli, he got ahead of Joe Jacoby, who, as everyone knows, played a long time, played for championship teams, and you know, has 4 Super Bowl rings.
Interesting. Interesting to hear. You know, that's good for the future. First time in the room for Tony, and certainly not the last time, we hope. Armando, thanks for the insight for that, and well done on the reporting this week. We'll look forward to the trades when they're done, and we appreciate your time as always.
Anytime.
Armando, thanks, buddy. We'll see you in Indy.
Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald with us. He's been a busy man this week.
Yeah, good reporter. Been doing it a long time, and not surprising that he was out ahead on on a lot of the Dolphins stuff. He's the guy.
By the way, ticket renewals, if you renew by February 28th, you can take advantage of loyalty pricing. Also, priority purchasing power for concerts at Daly's Place. For more information, order a new call, 633-2000. Speaking of Daly's Place, we'll get to some of the latest stuff coming up on that. Well, the construction continues on the south end. It's fun to see every day when you drive by it. And it just continues to build. We're less than 100 days away from the first concert, man. It's coming quick.
Coming quick.
Real quick. So, we're apparently waiting on a package here to be done to show you some of the latest that has happened to Daly's Place. You know, we'll get to that coming up. It's interesting to hear a Hall of Fame selector talk about that process, by the way. They don't all talk about it. Not many talk about it, in fact, in public.
Well, they talk about it more after the fact, and we've talked about it a lot on Jaguars.com since the Super Bowl. The vibe that I got from being out there was that the strides, and it sounds silly to say strides, he's not actually doing anything, but the momentum for Tony from maybe 3 years ago to right now has been remarkable. 3 years ago, he not only wasn't in the room, he wasn't close to the room. And then all of a sudden, he's in the final 25, in the final 15. To get into the final 10, I had more than a few voters and many guys who I've known for a long time who aren't the type to say things that you just want to hear, said after the Super Bowl, I think he's getting in the next couple of years. The momentum's there for him. The right people, the influential voters in the room are speaking for him. There's a belief that he deserves to get in. As we all know, when only five get in per year, it's not easy to get in, and there are more qualified guys than there are spots. But I didn't think 3 or 4 years ago, honestly, Brian, that he was ever going to get in. I thought there was a chance. I thought maybe Old Timers Committee. I thought he should, but I didn't think the momentum was going to be there. And boy, all of a sudden, it is really built to where I'll be surprised if he's not in, what's this year, 18 or 19.
Yeah. Well, look.
And just, he should be.
And this is covering old ground, but Vito Stellino wrote a great letter, right? And he has credibility in that room mm-hmm. from his time. And somehow, some of these voters obviously paid enough attention. They watched him dominate Bruce Smith. They watched him dominate Derek Thomas. They watched him dominate a guy they put in this year, right, and Jason Taylor. They saw the best pass rushers in the 90s and the early part of the 2000s that Pacelli went against, and he dominated, right? You compare him to the other tackles, Willie Rofe, Orlando Pace, Walter Jones, Jonathan Ogden. He's right there with them, if not a hair above most of them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he belongs in. I mean, I just don't know that we can say anything else. He'll get in.
Yeah, and
he will be in.
Again, I don't know if it's next year or the following year, but at some point I think he's going to get in.
I was kind of surprised that he got as far as he did this year, because it was sort of a stair-step process where you make the 25, you make the 15.
Well, and he's leaping stairs right
oh, yeah,
now,
right.
which is the point.
Right, and that was it. And I think he and I talk because we work out in the mornings together, and we were talking about it. I think he was even a little surprised at how
you
fast.
You just kind of wanted to tell people you're working out, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Not me.
All right.
No. You can just
you're looking fit, by the way.
I appreciate that. All right. It's funny because we work out in a group setting with a lot of people, and he was surrounded by people who wanted to ask him questions about it. And Tony, for a lot of the bravado that people know of him, he has moments of humility.
Okay.
Really?
He was very humble about it, and he kept
saying, we are buying time now.
Yeah, right. But he kept telling this group of people that, you know, he was pleased with how he was making progress.
Well, and I think that's true because, you know, It's fun to tease Tony about the humility, and if he gets
I
in,
tried, Tony. I tried.
If
I tried
he gets
to tell
in, we'll
that
have
you're
to reshape a lot of the doors in here because his head won't fit through them.
I did my best.
He truly he understands and respects the game. Yeah. He respects the Hall of Fame, and he understands that just because he was a great player, and he deep down knows he was a great player, I think he believes he should be in. But he also realizes if you're in that room, then – you are part of a very small group that's ever gotten to that room. And for all of the complaining that some guys do when they don't get in, I don't think you'll ever hear Tony say that.
No.
Because he understands.
You mean he's not going to go Terrell Owens?
Well, he understands that it's a
Terrell
process.
Terrell Owens does not belong in the Hall of Fame compared to Tony Boselli.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Let's move on to Daly's Place now. The construction continues in the south end at Everbank Field, and You know, it's coming fast. Less than 100 days from the first show, Tedeschi Trucks Band, Train and OAR is the next night. Two nights after that,
sounds like he's going to spend
Dave
a lot of time
Matthews
at the place,
and Tim
huh?
Reynolds. Yeah, I might be there a few days that opening weekend. But the construction, it's pretty interesting to see this process in action, Brian.
Well, and, you know, look, I've told you guys, I've walked around the stadium enough. I remember the first time I saw a picture of the Sydney Opera House, right? You remember the first time you saw it? It was like, wow, look at that. That's different.
I don't remember the first time, but I remember seeing it.
And I remember,
I'll Google it later.
I remember the first time that I was on a ferry going through Sydney Harbor, and I saw it in person, and I just couldn't stop looking at it the whole time I was down there. And it's kind of the same way here. I drive by it, and it's just from every angle that you look at it, you see something different. Mm-hmm. It is a unique piece of architecture, and I'm mesmerized by it. So I wanted to go and find out more because you can see the shape, but you understand it's not going to be a building in the sense that it's going to have, you know, steel walls. And so I wanted to find out about just the genesis of the look. And so I found Nick Sobick, who is running the project with the Jags this week, and found out where it all came from. When you see it, you recognize that Daly's Place isn't simply an amphitheater or just an indoor practice facility for the Jaguars. Daly's Place is a bridge between what Jacksonville is and what Jacksonville aspires to be.
We thought, what's already significant about downtown Jacksonville? And it's hard not to recognize how obvious and how sort of iconic our bridges all over downtown are. So rather than sort of build a structure that competes with what's already great and what's already iconic about downtown Jacksonville, we thought, why not, you know, create and design a building that complements what's already, you know, significant about downtown.
An iconic building, a symbolic building, is more than just the shape or the design. It's also the fundamental elements of its composition. And in the case of Daly's Place, those elements were critical in the evolution.
What you're looking at, this larger piece of material here, is a PTFE. It's very thin. But don't let that fool you. One of the fibers that's woven into this fabric is the same thing that they make bulletproof vests out of. So it's incredibly durable, and when you tension it between steel, it's just as strong, if not stronger, than, you know, any other material you see used in the stadium or, you know, anywhere around the city.
The whole project is interesting, right down to some of the basics of the structure, like the roof and the walls, which are made of space-age materials that will allow natural light into the facility and will at times reflect light to let people know something special is going on.
We're adding color-changing LEDs to the roof of this structure. And when we talked before, this is mostly opaque. So what's going to be nice is you have roof lights lighting down on the roof, creating this really interesting digital LED color-changing effect. And, you know, if you have a great show downtown, why not use that to sort of attract a little bit more attention to what's happening near Everbank Field at Daly's Place?
There's a long way to go, and with less than 100 days till opening night, a long to-do list to scratch off. We'll keep you up to date on the project as we get closer to an iconic future for downtown Jacksonville. So, whether you're driving east to west on the Hartbridge Expressway, or standing in Lot J looking from west back to the east, or walking the concourse, there's a different look no matter where you're standing. And that's why I'm so fascinated by it. And I think when these materials, which we had a chance to show folks, and we saw in person and hold, when you see them, it's not the Sydney Opera House. It's a concert venue and an indoor practice facility. But the lines and the materials are going to make it something that people can't stop looking at. I think it's going to be a tremendous addition to downtown Jacksonville.
So you're saying Shaw didn't settle for average?
No, he did not.
There's a shock.
Yeah. Iconic is probably the only way to describe it.
Well, yeah. The point is, that's it. What somebody asked me a couple years ago in the Ozone, but what do you think the indoor facility will be? This is far before he did this, and I said, well, he's not going to put up a glamorized airport hangar. When he does something, he's going to do it right, and it's going to be memorable, and it's going to be something that people notice.
Well, and when they light it up for a concert, any of those concerts that I know you will be there watching, you will see it from wherever you are around the river. You'll be able to see the lights glowing off of this translucent material. I think it's going to bring a big-time showing. The first time you get a Monday Night Football game in here, and those are probably on their way back, it will showcase Jacksonville in a way that most average football fans in places like Arizona, Colorado, Seattle don't think of Jacksonville. It's going to be a statement. It's interesting to watch. I love looking at it.
It's fun to see go up alongside the St. John's River right here outside of Everbank Field. What a show we had today. Our thanks to Mike Mayock, NFL Network. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Mike Mayock, and Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald. For John Osier, Brian Sexton.
Yeah, that's me.
Hollywood, Max Hockman, Joe Fortunato, our whole crew. I'm JP Shadrick. Thank you for watching Jaguars.com Live, presented by Everbank.